Hello, this is your Sun Sounds volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton, bringing you this week's edition of Earth and Home. Today, we will be reading from Real Simple Magazine, October 2024, and Mother Earth News, October-November 2024. Let's get started with Real Simple. Last week, we ended with How to Plan Your Dream Vacation. Let's finish the end this week. The subheaders were Pick Your Ultimate Destination, Break Down the Budget, Start a Savings Challenge, Book Early, like super early, Enlist an Expert, Plan Your Time Just Right, Focus on Immersion and Interaction, Buy That Travel Insurance, Make Some Lists, and we'll finish with Soak It All In. A trip of a lifetime consists of out-of-the-ordinary journeys, characterized by transformative experiences, meaningful connections, and unforgettable moments, McNeil says. Those things can happen sitting on a bench in the Tuileries garden, over coffee at the hotel, or, well, you get the point. Even when you've been fantasizing for years about a place, don't forget to enjoy the journey in all its unpredictability. Take pics, but don't bury your nose in your phone. Bond with your travel companions, and have a laugh when things go wrong. Then call your travel agent. That's how you create the memories that will stay with you long after you've turned off your out-of-office message. That concludes the article, How to Plan Your Dream Vacation. Now we'll read How to Do Things. Clean This, Your Yard. Do a fall cleanup before the weather takes a turn, by Hannah Baker. Lawn. Put down the rake. Our experts suggest mowing your leaves and leaving the bits and pieces in your wake. Why? They help contain weeds as they decompose. Fertilize the soil with nutrients your grass needs, like nitrogen. During your final mowing session of the season, keep the grass on the longer side, around 3 inches. The precise length depends on your region and the type of grass you have. Taller grass has longer roots, which are able to reach more nutrients during winter and beyond. To further help grass get those nutrients, you may want to aerate your soil. Heavy rainfall in the spring and summer can compact dirt, making it harder for roots to penetrate. Rent a power aerator from about $80 a day and get to work punching holes in your lawn. A half acre should take you about an hour, and yay, the process can be oddly calming. Gutters. Consider this a gutter appreciation moment. They direct water away from your home, protecting your roof, walls, foundation, and landscape. They do need TLC, though, because a buildup of leaves and debris can make them sag and lead to wet basements, leaky roofing, mold growth, and water damage inside and outside. Aim to clean your gutters at least twice a year, once at the start of spring and once toward the end of autumn to clear out the fallen leaves. If you're comfortable on a ladder, you can do it yourself with a pair of outdoor work gloves and something like the Gutter Getter Cleaning Kit, $30, Amazon.com, which comes with a scooper, grabbing tool, and extension handle that reaches up to 42 inches. For safety, keep one hand on your ladder at all times and enlist a spotter. Our experts also suggest clipping on a ladder stabilizer. If you're using an extension ladder, it has rubber pads that grip to the side of the house or roof to keep the ladder from sliding out from under you. If you'd rather work from terra firma, get a telescoping wand like the one at Wright. For extra protection, look into installing gutter guards, which are mesh covers that help keep out leaves, tree needles, and other debris. Your local hardware store may have a few DIY options. Gutter Glove Gutter Guard is a popular one, with 80 feet of coverage for less than $200. Or you can hire a pro to install them. Expect to pay around $1,500. You'll still have to clean the gutters, but it'll be a matter of swiping versus scooping and hosing. Garden beds. Good news. Messy beds are eco-friendly. they can provide a place for pollinators to hunker down during the winter, remove damaged branches and mats of full leaves, which can cause pathogen buildup. In their place, toss in some of those mulched leaves from your lawn. They break down faster, adding nutrients to the soil, while protecting the plant's root systems from the elements. Once you've done this minimalish cleanup, you should be set until spring. If you live somewhere snowy, leave the snow on your plants. It can be a great insulator for your garden. Thanks, Mother Nature. That concludes your yard. Next, nerding out. Witches. Enough with the hocus pocus. Let's stir up some truths behind all this toil and trouble. By Deborah Harkness, PhD. It may be the season of the witch, but back in the day, witchcraft was a serious concern year-round. Europe and the New World colonies experienced the height of witch trials and executions between about 1450 and 1750, when life could be brutal and short and paranoia ran rampant. People suspected others of being in league with the devil, performing evil deeds known as maleficium. The accused, meanwhile, were often just using their skills to help the community. Witches, most of them women, would provide food and medical treatment to neighbors, two- and four-legged. Then, when disease or poor harvest plagued a village, the helpers might be blamed, charged with magical malfeasance, and sentenced to death. Other innocent people were at risk, too. Read on for some more truly frightening history. Deadly differences. Besides healers and helpers, the accused were often figures outside the mainstream. Targets included impoverished people, women who owned property, people with distinct physical features, those with a taste for luxury, couples in abusive relationships, boisterous servants, and older folks with mental frailties. Beyond Salem. Here in the U.S., we tend to think primarily of the 1690s trials in the coastal Massachusetts town. They were the largest trials in colonial America. 14 women, 5 men, and 2 dogs were executed for the crime of witchcraft there. Some animals were said to be possessed by witches or in cahoots with the devil. But they were only a tiny part of a big phenomenon. During the 300-year witch craze in Europe, about 45,000 people, 75% of them women, and an unknown number of animals were executed. Costume drama. The stereotypical witch image comes from various sources. Matthew Hopkins, a 17th century witch hunter, advised officials to look for devil's marks, like moles and warts. Popular artwork from the time showed women with cauldrons, in reality used for making life-saving stews, not evil potions. Cats, helpful in keeping mice away, and brooms for sweeping, not flying. Deborah Harkness, PhD, is a history professor at the University of Southern California and the best-selling author of the All Souls novel, the fifth in the series. The Blackbird Oracle came out in July. That concludes witches. Now we'll move on to Mother Earth news. The healthiest flower for your family. Different households have different needs. Find out what to consider when selecting flower. By Amy Neuzel. Choosing the best flower for your family will ensure that the food you prepare provides the most nutritional benefit. Different flower options can have various risks and benefits, both nutritionally and environmentally. North America's most commonly available flour is fortified or enriched wheat flour made from modern wheat varieties. Fortification programs for wheat flour have been standard in North America since the World War II, when nutrient deficiencies, such as folate deficiency, became commonplace because of wartime food scarcity. Today's enrichment programs include folic acid, other B vitamins, and often iron. Enriched flour. To make enriched flour, the fiber-rich bran and fatty, nutrient-dense germ of the grain are removed. These are the natural sources of fats, fat-soluble vitamins, fiber, B vitamins, and antioxidants. and they're removed for consumer taste and texture preferences and to increase the flower's shelf life. The flower is then typically bleached to achieve the pleasing whiteness the average consumer favors. To meet the enrichment guidelines set by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, every pound of flower then has thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, folic acid, and iron added. Enrichment is mandatory in the U.S. for commercially produced flours to help reduce deficiencies and prevent folate deficiency-related neural tube defects in babies. Most developed countries have now initiated grain fortification programs of their own. While enrichment programs were highly successful during periods of food scarcity, the modern abundance of food and dietary supplements may be changing the picture for some populations. Folic acid, for example, is also found in multivitamins, prenatal vitamins, prescriptions, B-complex blends, breakfast cereals, many energy-boosting products, meal replacement shakes and bars, commercial protein powders, and other products. Studies have shown that excessive levels of folic acid build up in the bloodstream as unmetabolized folic acid, UMFA. Adverse health outcomes, including cancer, food allergies, and infertility, have been linked to high blood levels of UMFA. Folate versus folic acid. It's crucial to distinguish between naturally occurring folate, the form of vitamin B9 that occurs in dark green leafy vegetables, beans, pulses, citrus fruits, and other whole foods, and folic acid. Folic acid is a lab-created crystalline, shelf-stable form of folate used as a food additive, while natural folate degrades too quickly to be a food additive. Although folic acid is often treated as interchangeable with folate, they're structurally different and go through different enzyme processes in your body. To use folate and folic acid, your body must convert them to the active form of vitamin B9, L5 methyl tetrahydrofolate, or L5-MTHF. The methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase, MTHFR enzyme, in your body is the final step for all types of folate in this conversion process. Unfortunately, common genetic variances affect this process. Studies have shown that approximately 40% of the population carries a silent or at least quiet MTHFR genetic mutation affecting folate and folic acid activation. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Earth and Home, and I am your volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Let's get back to the healthiest flower for your family. Understanding MTHFR mutations. MTHFR is the gene that codes for an enzyme of the same name that activates all forms of folate. MTHFR mutations affect the efficiency of this conversion and can impair body processes that need active folate. Active folate is vital for neurotransmitter formation, antioxidant production, cellular energy, cell division, and DNA methylation. Studies have shown that folic acid can increase symptoms associated with MTHFR, more drastically impair folate activation, and lead to higher blood UMFA levels for people with MTHFR genetic mutations. Most people with MTHFR gene mutations are unaware of it, although symptoms associated with MTHFR are increasingly common. These include anxiety, depression, cardiovascular disease, low thyroid function, decreased fertility, repeat miscarriages, and fatigue. Cardiovascular disease, chronic fatigue, autoimmune disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's dementia are also associated with MTHFR gene variances. If you suspect you might have a MTHFR mutation, speak with your doctor first about any genetic testing, dietary changes, or supplements you may need. You may find eliminating folic acid from food sources, such as enriched flour, and from supplements, prescriptions, and multivitamins helpful, as well as including foods high in natural folate, such as beans, pulses, dark green leafy vegetables, asparagus, avocado, and citrus fruit. Folic acid side effects. Outside of those with the MTHFR genetic variant, there's also the risk of unknowingly taking too much folic acid. The FDA has set the tolerable upper intake level for folic acid at 1,000 micrograms daily. However, it's easy to exceed that threshold with the combination of vitamins, meal replacements, enriched foods, and fortified flour. In a 2020 study of folate levels in newborn babies, cord blood, every baby tested had measurable levels of UMFA. Excessive intake of folic acid has also been shown to promote some forms of cancer, decrease fertility, increase the risk of food sensitivities, and increase cognitive impairment in the elderly. Ancient substitutes. It's still possible to find non-enriched flour by buying organic or 100% whole wheat flour, for which enrichment isn't mandatory. Check the labels on these products, because some companies may choose to enrich them so they're perceived as healthier. But still, is this the healthiest flour for your family, or are there better alternatives? Folic acid isn't the only issue involved in the health of grain products, and ancient grains and heirloom varieties of wheat offer different nutritional profiles from conventionally grown modern wheat. Ancient grains and heirloom wheat varieties that haven't been hybridized or genetically modified exist now in the same form as thousands of years ago. Typically, they're higher in fiber, protein, vitamins, and other critical nutrients than modern grains, which are bred to have a greater proportion of starch and be easily harvested with modern machinery. Ancient grains and heirloom wheat also typically contain more micronutrients, including vitamins and minerals. Heirloom varieties of grains are often grown in richer soil using older or organic farming practices. Modern wheat is primarily grown using modern fertilization and farming techniques, so it's difficult to determine if the grains themselves are more nutrient dense or if higher micronutrient levels are a product of more balanced farming techniques. Heirloom wheat and diabetes. Heirloom wheat and ancient grains may also help delay and reduce the progression of type 2 diabetes. A study published in the Review of Diabetic Studies in 2015 compared 40 rats, each of whom was fed a diet based on one of five different grains: einkorn, emmer, spelt, rye, and refined wheat, for 9 weeks. The researchers then measured hepatic enzymes produced by key regulatory genes involved in glucose and fat metabolism. Emmer and einkorn wheat downregulated these genes, indicating a prevention or delay of diabetes type 2. Spelt and rye were also shown to have less impact on blood sugar relative to modern wheat. Compared with enriched all-purpose flour, heirloom einkorn wheat is also higher in phenolic acids, which have powerful antioxidant effects, lower in gluten, higher in carotenoid forms of vitamin A, and higher in micronutrients such as zinc and iron. From a simple macronutrient perspective, the relative values of modern and heirloom wheats vary widely. All in the details. Keep in mind any health conditions present within your family tree. If struggles with diabetes, insulin resistance, or other metabolic diseases are common, then the impact of different grains on your blood sugar will be an important factor to consider. If thyroid conditions, mental health issues, Alzheimer's, dementia, or fertility troubles are represented, then avoiding fortified flour and other fortified products, as well as outside sources of folic acid, could be important. If some family members suffer from non-celiac gluten sensitivity, then a trial of einkorn or emmer wheat might prove valuable, although there's still too much gluten content for true celiac disease. Outside of the health benefits, the joys of contributing to the preservation of heirloom and alternative grain use in a world that's becoming far less diverse can also make the exploration worthwhile. Amy Nuzil is a naturopathic doctor, U.S., MTHFR Mutant, and the host of the To Health With That podcast. Sign up for her biweekly mailing list at https://tohealthwiththat.com. That concludes the article, The Healthiest Flower for Your Family. The next article is Make the Most of Mayhaws. Natural pectin makes the mayhaw fruit perfect for jams and jellies. Learn how to grow these productive plants. Story by Kenny Coogan, photos by Will Nance. Often located on the banks of ponds and rivers, the mayhaw, Crataegus aestivalis, is a deciduous primarily southern shrub in the hawthorn family that can be trained into a small tree. It can be found as far west as Mississippi and as far north as southeastern Virginia. Mayhaws thrive in wet areas such as wetlands, swamps, and shallow ponds. Some can reach 30 feet in height. The mayhaw comprises about half a dozen popular cultivars in a western species, C. apaca, all of which produce edible fruit. The range of C. apaca extends from southeastern Texas to the Florida Panhandle and as far north as southern Arkansas. Will Nance, team member at the farm at Okefenokee, prefers the wild variety of C. aestivalis, which is available at some nurseries that carry native plants. The farm at Okefenokee is a rural agriculture community near Folkston, Georgia, that offers a farm-focused lifestyle. The farm has around 2,000 planted mayhaws, which yielded 160 gallons of mayhaw fruit in 2022. Here, Nance shares his expert advice from his experience growing these hardy, beautiful, and bountiful plants at the farm. Quick identification. Consider the following characteristics to help determine if you're looking at a mayhaw. Branches. Mayhaw branches have, on average, 1 to 3 inch thorns, so exercise caution when examining them. Leaves. Mayhaw leaves are deep green with dark lobes and fine serrations. Since mayhaws are deciduous, they'll shed most of their leaves before winter. Bark. Mature mayhaw bark is gray as it ages. It'll turn from smooth to developing vertical fissures and narrow ridges. Flowers. Mayhaws produce prolific five-petaled white blooms, typically in early spring, hence their name. Fruits. The small fruits begin to ripen in May to early June. The fruits are similar to cranberries in appearance and to crabapples in taste. Nance describes their flavor as very tart and acidic to somewhat tasteless, better suited for jelly and jam than for eating fresh. The fruit is ready for harvest once its color has changed to bright red and a few fruits have fallen from the trees. Its flesh should still be crisp and firm when ripe, not mushy. Growing mayhaws. Soil. Start with 3-gallon pots to make the thorns more manageable, but get them in the ground as soon as possible. Plant them in a slightly moist, acidic soil. They can also handle sandier soils on account of their strong roots, which, as Nance notes, are partly what makes the plants a boon to erosion prevention efforts. Mayhaws can be grown in zones 6A to 11B, but they don't thrive in areas that receive heavy frost. Quantity. While you may get a good crop from one tree, planting 3 to 5 trees is ideal for cross-pollination and optimal harvest. To get any sort of a significant yield where you'd be able to use them for jam and jelly, you'd need multiple plants, Nance says. It's going to be a couple of years before you get anything significant. They need time to mature. Fertilizer. When the farm initially planted its orchard of mayhaws, workers fertilized the trees once a week with an organic granular 4x4x4 blend. The fertilizer schedule was later changed to as needed, once every quarter or so, depending on the growth rate. The workers fertilized the mayhaws through the fruiting stage, but then paused this schedule during the harvesting stage. Maintenance. Mayhaws require light maintenance. Nance prunes them through the growing cycle and watches out for suckers to make sure the tree is producing its optimal yield. He has also noticed occasional signs of cedar apple rust, which he treats with a biologic. Harvesting. To harvest the fruit, workers at the farm lay down tarps and shake the trees. They then wash and sort the fruit and freeze it for further use. Nance estimates that 90% of the harvested berries are usable. This high yield makes the mayhaw a boon to any farm. Mayhaw jelly recipe. Yield 2 half-pint jars. Ingredients: 1 pound partially ripened mayhaws, 3/4 cup sugar per 1 cup mayhaw juice. 1. Bring to boil 1 pound partially ripened mayhaws in 2 cups water. Stir often to prevent burning. Once the mixture begins to boil, reduce heat and simmer for 10 to 15 minutes. The fruit should be tender enough to mash. To keep the natural pectin intact, don't overcook. 2. Once tender, strain through a dampened jelly bag or cheesecloth. Drain the juice into a bowl or pan. Don't squeeze or press the juice, as this will cause the jelly to become cloudy. 3. Measure your mayhaw juice and pour it into a sauce pot. For each cup of juice, add 3/4 cup of sugar. Boil over high heat. To test for doneness, dip a cool metal spoon into the boiling jelly mixture. The syrup shouldn't drip from the spoon, but should come together and sheet off. 4. Once cooked, remove from heat and pour into sterilized jars, leaving 1/4 inch headspace. Wipe rims, add canning lids, and place in a boiling water canner for 5 minutes, if at sea level to 1,000 feet, or for 10 minutes at 1,000 to 6,000 feet. Kenny Coogan earned a master's degree in global sustainability and co-hosts the Mother Earth News and Friends podcast, www.motherearthnews.com/podcast. He also created and hosts the TV show Florida's Flora and Fauna with conservationist Kenny Coogan. To learn more, visit www.floridasfloraandfauna.com. That concludes Make the Most of Mayhaws. If you missed any part of this program or are interested in another program, check out our on-demand menu on sunsounds.org. We are at the conclusion of this week's Earth and Home program. This is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster, Carol Hampton. Thank you for tuning in this week. Join me next time for another new and informative program. Have a great week and stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.